This is Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over and a continuation of Mr. Arthur Eastman's visit on Saturday morning, 24th of November, 1968. And this is Channel 1 over, beginning of Channel 1 over and a continuation of Mr. Arthur Eastman's visit on Saturday morning, the 24th of November, 1968. This is Channel 1 over and a continuation of Mr. Arthur Eastman's visit on Saturday morning, the 24th of November, 1968.
And that milk sticks onto him. Is he going to come right around out? Well, I guess on the outside they got a knife that's right on that. It just shears that right off. I've seen that milk come off in sheets just about like a newspaper.
Oh?
And might run 500-600 feet long before it'd break.
Oh?
And then maybe the next thing it'd all be broke up. You never knew, you know, see?
Yeah.
And it dropped right down into a trough and had an auger to run it right along over there, and then it went through a beater, just like a little hammer mill,
mm-hmm.
and beat it right through a sieve, right through a brass screen sieve. And that's what makes your powdered milk.
Yeah.
There's some plants make you cook powdered coffee the same way.
Oh.
Your coffee is percolated and runs right in there, and it runs right around out, and that's... But they're coming out every day with new processes of powdering that milk. But that's mm-hmm. where they started.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, they'd keep at it. They wouldn't do it the same way.
Well, they come out with a process now. They claim that they freeze it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you?
I just saw the advertisement.
They claim that they freeze it, and the water in it freezes, and they take that off and leaves the coffee.
Sure.
It's just like years ago, you know, they used to make cider. And if you left a barrel of cider out and let it freeze, just the water would freeze, you know, and what was left in there would be solid alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. How about that?
You take just a little bit of that stuff out of a barrel that's been frozen, it'll knock you for a loop.
Wow.
You think you're getting cider, but it's not.
Mr. Eastman, you had a lot of maintaining up there to do with all those machines you put in.
Yeah.
You put them in and then had to keep them going.
Yeah. They send up some from New York, and I put the one in there to Munsville. And there was another company that somebody else done the maintenance for. And the head guy from New York that I was working for come over to see how I was coming, and I said, you want to see it run? Run? Well, I said, them other fellows ain't hardly got there started yet. Well, I said, this one here was ready to run last night. And the other fellow says, will you come down and help my boys out? Well, I said, no. Well, why not? Because I says, if I go down there, I says, I'd boss the job, and I ain't going down there and stick my nose in somebody else's business. Well, now, he says, if you'll come down, he says, I'll take you right down there, and I'll tell them that you've come down to oversee, he says, of putting that in. Well, if you want to do that, and you want me bad enough to pay me double time, I said, I'll go down... Take my men down. I had three men working for me. I says, we'll go down there and we'll hustle it up. He says, you bring your men down tomorrow morning. He says, and I'll be there. So I went down. It was about 10 miles down there. I went down there. Jesus, they wasn't anywhere near getting along with it at all. They was having a heck of a lot of trouble. We went to work and got it running down there in 2 days.
Well, they hadn't done it before.
No.
They were having to find out about it.
They was a maintenance man for that station down there.
Oh?
But either I'd put in powdered milk machines and put in cheese-making equipment.
Oh, that's right, all of that.
And all of that stuff, and yeah. Separators. And,
yeah.
And you know the most expensive butter you can buy?
What's that?
Whey butter.
Oh, really? Whey butter.
You know what that is?
Never heard of it.
Huh? Didn't you?
I don't think so.
It's whey butter. We eat it. We use it sometimes.
Whey butter?
Well, I guess it's not Well, it may not be the same thing.
The Jewish people are crazy over that, you know, and boy, they pay a premium for it.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you take when you make cheese, your whey, you draw off from your cheese, and you run it through a separator.
Oh.
And that whey cream, it looks just like gold. It's just as yellow as gold.
Oh. Oh. Is that right?
And you get about a can of whey cream out of about 200 cans of whey.
Yeah.
Why, Mr. Eastman?
It takes a lot of it.
Yeah, not much left.
But there ain't too much there. But...
No, I guess I haven't used it. That must be expensive.
Yeah, it is. Well, I think that good whey butter would run you about $2 a pound.
Mm-hmm. I guess I don't know what
but
it is.
But those Jewish people are crazy over it. And then they made pot cheese.
Pot cheese?
Yeah. Pot cheese is made a good deal like the old-fashioned Dutch cheese. And they take and make the curds up, you know, and then they pack it right in cans and send it to another processing plant. And I don't know just how they do process it, but I never had anything to do with the processing of it. In the same way with your the cheese that you get today is not cheddar cheese. It's all processed with breakfast foods.
Oh, really?
Sure, this cheese that you buy.
Has breakfast foods in it?
Sure it is.
No wonder it doesn't taste like cheese. But now, this cheese we buy down here at Fred Woods in a big hoop.
Well,
is
that might be cheddar cheese.
Oh?
But you buy this Kraft cheese and this
Velveeta
and all of that, it's...
It's just a little
cheese. It's about a quarter cereal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know that. It doesn't taste like cheese.
Yeah.
Well, you fool with a lot of machinery then, haven't you, Mr.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of it. I've been down here to Reddick and took that peanut sheller treatment outfit, took that all apart, and rebuilt that.
Peanut sheller?
Down Reddick,
John Palmer's got one down there, you know. It's a peanut sheller, and then they treat that seed. That's the worst dang stuff that you ever got into. A boy sneeze, you sneeze for a week after you get into that stuff.
Oh, really?
Where they treat them peanuts, see, for before they plant the seed.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in that.
He buys peanuts from, by the tractor trailer load from New Mexico.
Oh, Mr. Eastman.
Those giant peanuts.
John Palmer?
Yeah, sure. And then they come, two bushel in a bag, all in the shucks. Then they have to run them all through a peanut sheller there and take them, shell them all, you know. And then the split peanuts all goes for peanut butter.
Now, you mean, what does he do with them?
Well, they're all separated down there, see?
And he sells them to plant?
He sells them for the some place for peanut butter. The split ones, you know.
Yeah.
You see, a peanut, in order to grow, has got to be whole.
Yeah.
And then it runs out through the sieves down there, and they're all graded. Just the A number ones are all the ones that he sells for seed.
He sells peanuts for seed.
Oh, yes.
And he buys the rough peanuts. And then processes them himself. Well, he don't do it himself. Who does it?
Well, he hires somebody to run a sheller.
Not much trouble.
And then they won't take care of it. And the next thing you know, they tear it all to pieces. And then he'll get on the telephone. All righty, old boy, the peanut sheller's broke down. Can you come right down?
He does about everything, doesn't he?
Yeah.
As long as you're there to help him.
Well, he takes and puts a pile of them peanuts out on shares, you know, with these colored guys.
No, I didn't know that.
Sure.
That's the old sharecropping system, isn't it?
Yeah, where he's taking and furnish the peanuts and the fertilizer. Well, then they do the work and furnish the ground for half, see?
And,
Then they got to take the price of the fertilizer and the seed out, and then half what's left.
Well, now, they take and John will furnish the peanuts and the fertilizer, and they furnish the land and do the work. Well, then when they sell the peanuts,
they just split
John
them.
Gets half of it, and they get half of it.
Yeah. And they got the land?
Yeah.
They furnish the land. Oh, I see.
Well, then John's got quite a lot of land that he can hire somebody to disc it up and put the peanuts in, and then he gets the whole thing when they get...
Yeah. Well, he's got to have a...
The same way with watermelons.
Oh, does he go in for that, too?
He puts out a lot of watermelons that same way, too.
I didn't know that. I thought he... run a store.
Well, I'm telling you, he's in for anything there's a nickel in.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he's probably made a good many nickels.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I went to Ocala with him. I went to Ocala with him a year ago. Well, it was in the watermelon time. A year ago last spring, not this last spring when they had the watermelon, but the year before that. Down just this side of Ocala, they was picking the watermelons there. John says, I got to stop in here and see how my boys are coming. So we stopped in there, and he went giving them orders for this and that and the other down there. Them was his watermelons they was picking.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, he probably sends them up here to Huff to take them through the chute up there.
Yes, I guess he does. But you know that Huff has got the market right by the pants. Primus there, he gets a commission on every doggone bit of that fruit and stuff that's sold in Marion County. He gets a commission on it. No matter who sells it.
No matter who sells it.
Is that right?
Huh?
That's silly.
And he's just an everyday drunk.
Everyday drunk.
Well, he gets on them tears and is gone for a month sometimes. Nobody knows where he is. Well, I suppose somebody knows where he is, but come home and beat the devil out of his wife. Sure, she left him once and went down to old Caleb. The kid cried and took on so she finally went back with him.
Doesn't do much good to have a lot of money, does it, Miss Eason?
He got his start cheating a Jew, so you can make up your mind he's smart.
How about that?
Yes, sir. He was just a fishing guide on the lake. And a Jew come down here from New York City, and somewhere in their conversation out in the lake of fishing, he said he wished that he could get into the fruit business. And he had the money to put into it to get started in the fruit business. And Huff talked good to him there, and one thing or another, and went in with him. The next thing he knew, he cheated the Jew out of all he had.
All things.
Now, that's the way it's told me. And that's how he got started in the fruit business.
Mr. Ether?
What?
Well, that's the way they tell me that he got it.
Did you pay Mr. Eastman?
No, but I will.
Oh, about $5, I guess. When he gets just right, you can even see his white head, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw his white head.
Well, how'd you notice him, Mr. Ethan?
Huh?
How'd you happen to notice
him? Look at his white head.
Well, I heard that airplane, and I looked up there, and I see the two of them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes,
sir.
Huh.
You know, they get once in a while one up in New York State.
Isn't he pretty with his white head?
Yeah.
See ya? He's supposed to have a white tail, but I don't see he got a white tail.
Light's not right on him.
They claim that they don't get a white head until they're 4 years old.
Oh.
Is that right? I didn't realize that.
That's the reason that there's so many eagles shot, you know, hawks or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he got a white head, all right.
I think it'd be fun to be an eagle.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he sails up there. No, down there by Johnny Woodruff's. Liquor store. And the big pine tree out there, there's a nest.
Yeah, I saw that.
We was down there one day putting on a turkey shoot. And the eagle come and he had a limb about as big around as my arm. And it was probably over 6-8 feet long. You know, he flew up there, and he got right to it, and the dog on in hit, you know.
Yeah.
And he pretty near got away from him, see, and you'd ought to see the maneuvers that that thing went through. And finally, he kept fussing around there, by gee, till he got it high enough, he got it on there.
Yeah.
But he had to try half a dozen times. That's it?
Yeah.
And there were half a dozen fellas out there, and we were watching him, and they were laughing to beat all. See that eagle, he get up there, you know, and he'd try to get that on there, and just couldn't make it.
I saw that nest. I don't know whether that one or not. Yeah.
And over to Cedar Keys, there's four or five nests over there. We was over there one Sunday. And they've got one nest over there by the Cedar Key Airport. And it's right up on top of the tower.
Oh?
And,
Why, I didn't.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. And, we see this, well, it's a square tower goes up, you know. Oh, it's probably 3-4 feet, maybe more than that. Maybe 6 feet square goes up there, you know. It had a light on the top of it. See, the eagles built a nest up there. Well, anyway, before we got there, we could see that old eagle. She'd fly around like that, you know, and then she'd make a dive. And come right back up, you know, and round again, and down she goes. That's doggone funny. So we drove over there. Got over there, and here was a Volkswagen from Gainesville. Had a Gainesville license on it. And there was a fellow up there. He'd climb up that doggone tower up there, and he was up there, and he had a camera taking pictures, and he said there were two young eagles up there.
Oh.
And that old eagle would dive onto him, you know. Well, now, you know, he no business molesting that doggone eagle like that.
No.
My sister-in-law was going to turn him in. She was madder than hops, and she took the license of the car and everything, and she was going to turn him in. Well, then she got home, and we talked her out of it. There's trouble enough in the world without making some more. But at the same time, he no business disturbing that eagle like
no.
that.
He was
dog
up there making trouble for her.
It's a doggone wonder that that eagle didn't
get him.
Scrape him all up, you know.
Yeah, with them claws.
Ooh, she could have. Yes, but she certainly could have.
By God, I wouldn't want to try to climb up there.
No, sir. No, sir.
Well, that eagle would go right up, you know, and boy, she'd come right down. And when she come down, she was really coming.
Yeah.
You've seen them hit the lake, ain't you? After fish?
I'm not sure that I have. I've seen the pelicans do it.
Well, them eagles and there's fish hawks. They're a good deal like an eagle.
I've seen the fish hawks do it.
Boy, they'll come right down, you know. And, you know, when they hit the water, you've seen the water go
yeah.
splash?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was over there at Orange Lake one day over there, and God, them eagles would come right down just like that. Right in there. And when they come back out, boy, they had a fish, too.
Mr. Eastman, I certainly like your outfit here. Say, this is a... Look at that guy all over.
Say, I hadn't noticed that, Freddie.
Why?
That's a regular carpenter's apron.
You got your carpenter's apron attached to the...
Yes, it doesn't. Uh-huh. Now, you can buy them. That these aprons have got a zipper in, and the zipper comes off.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's one bad thing about it. A lot of the times you'll get working around, the next thing you know, you bent that doggone zipper in there, and
yeah.
then you can't get it either on or off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bad
yeah.
Well, now, and you got big pockets here. What are all those
mm-hmm.
for?
Well, I like that regular.
Yeah.
Pockets.
Uh-huh.
That's I like them. I've got two other sets over there that I've had for a number of years. But they're not as heavy as this. You see, this is made out of a, just like a canvas slab.
Uh-huh. But now these button on, you can take them off, can't you?
Well, no.
No, that's tight.
It's just, it's so down
I
here,
see.
But that just holds down.
I see.
See, keep it,
yeah.
Keep it from flopping up.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah, I see. Uh-huh.
No, I never saw that an outfit like that. And that's a regular carpenter's outfit.
Well,
I got the other ones there, and I use the other ones there for painting. I got to get me another one of them. So, wash them. Geez, I've wore this 2 weeks now.
Well, I'm glad you got the pen out of it, so you won't get stuck anymore.
Jesus, that was a funny thing.
Yeah.
Without ticket on there.
Where did that come from? Where'd you get those, mister?
I got these up to Fields's.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, and you got them big enough that you just go on over your clothes.
In Gainesville?
Fields has about everything.
I always buy overalls big enough to go over my clothes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always a cold-blooded cussing.
Yeah.
The minute they get the first frost, boy, I'm froze.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have in my lifetime.
You know, I mean, you know, to get in the business and things like
yeah.
that.
Yes, I borrowed money one time.
I don't believe it's as easy to do now as it used to be when a man's word sort of was his, you know.
I don't know. He could have got it.
Yes, sir. But up there in Gainesville, he went to several. And they just vetoed him everywhere he went. They were interested in him, talked to him about it.
Well, you know, that was the way with... you see, my father, George Eastman, the Kodak man, was own cousins.
Oh, really?
And George, you know... You see, they were big hop farmers. There is a pile of hops. George wouldn't go out and work with the rest of them in the hop fields there. He was just playing with cigar boxes. And they always said that George never would amount to anything because he wouldn't work. And Jesus, all at once he came out with that Kodak, you know, and in a few years he could have bought them all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was born and brought up and developed the Kodak in Waterville, New York. And that's just a little ways from Utica.
Yeah.
Well, he tried, you know, to get backing around there to develop that. And the banks around there just kind of laughed at him. Well, he got out to Rochester, New York. And there was one bank fellow out there that listened to him and could see where they might do something with it, see?
Uh-huh.
And so they backed him up. And that's how he come to be in Rochester.
Yeah. Well, now, take a fellow like Don Palmer. I don't imagine he not a money. He don't deal in money.
I think he does some.
Well, you see, $3,000 or $4,000 is nothing.
No.
But it would have started this boy in business.
Well, he went down... I was down to Ocala with him one time, and he'd got to go to the bank. That's when they was starting that new Florida bank down there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he bought 100 shares at $100 a share and plunked the money right down. $10,000.
Yeah.
They didn't want to sell him 100 shares. They wanted him to take 50, and he said 100 or nothing.
Oh.
100 or nothing.
Well, now, what does he do? He just lives on that ready?
He lives in Anthony.
That's about like ready.
Yeah. See, he's an old bach. He never got married.
I thought that is his wife in there.
No, she ought to be. She lives with him part of the time.
Well, she talked like she owned the place. She talked nice.
Which one you mean? That
she's
little,
sort of a light.
That little woman there with the wearer's glasses?
I don't know about the glasses. She's rather a small woman. She talks well, sort of fast.
No, she just works there.
Oh.
No, John's mother and sisters live over there to Anthony. John's mother is 96 years old.
Yeah.
But he don't live with them.
Yeah, he lives with his mother and that and one sister that never got married.
Yeah.
Well, then he's got a sister that lives in Georgia, and she comes down here part of the time. And then he's got another sister that lives there in Antony. And it seems to me he's got a sister up in North Carolina.
All sisters.
And he's got one brother somewhere. I don't know where he is. And they tell the story about John selling his brother's shoes. His brother had a new pair of shoes, and somebody come to the store and wanted a pair just like that, and John didn't have them, so Jesus, John got his brother's shoes out and sold them.
He don't tell him on himself, does he?
No, John made the deal anyway. And then he got his brother another pair.
Does he tell yarns?
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny had, there was one woman that worked in down there. Her name was Saar, S-A-A-R. And it seemed that years ago, she and her man run that inn over there to Antony. And John got chasing around with her there, and her man kicked her out. So John took care of her and kept her seen. And he'd have her over at the store taking care of the books and one thing and another. And she lived over at Antony. Well, I was working over there in the next house. And I didn't know anything about it at that time. And I see these colored people up around the other house working out there and one thing and another. And I says, and John come over and I said, what do you got, colored people up the next house? Where? He says, well, I says, up there. Hell no. He says, Mary lives there. Well, I says, who's Mary? Well, he said, don't you know that woman that works over in the store there, he says, and takes care of the books? He says, that's where she lives. Well, the next thing I knew, I got inquiring around and I found out about it. Well, then Mary got sick. And I was working over to Antony there, and Mary was sick. And she didn't go over to the store, and she had some papers that were supposed to have been brought over to the store, and she hadn't got over there with them. So they tried to call her on the telephone, and she didn't answer. So John said, well, to this other fellow, we'll go over and get them. So they got over there. By Jean, here she laid, about halfway between the bed and the telephone. She laid there on the ground, on the floor, deader than a knit.
Uh-huh.
They think that the telephone rung. She got up to answer the telephone and had a heart attack and died. So that night, when I got back home, I stopped down John. John says, Artie, did you hear what Mary done? I said, no, what's Mary done now? She died, she did. He says, oh, boy, how he did bawl. God, I felt sorry for the fella.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he bawled and took kind of awful. He did feel, you know, he really did love Mary, I think.
Well, how long have you known John Palmer?
Have I known him?
Yeah. You've known him some time, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I've probably known John for 15 years.
How long have you been down here?
I've been down here winter since 1945.
Oh.
See, I used to come down in the winter and come back in the summer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Up there. Well, then, I've been down here summers since 1960.
And so you've known him when you were down here in the winter?
Yeah. Yeah.
See your friends coming? Stand there looking at you.
Yeah. Well, I think I better go home and eat us some dinner.
Yeah, it's about
well,
that time.
They expect you to speak to them, Mr. Easton.
They what?
They come up here to speak to you.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly appreciate it.
Now, they treat that one like a stepchild.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yonder. She not always in good favor with them.
She's a little white one. Is the youngest. And she just stands around and waits for them to
get in ahead of her.
Yeah, yeah. She just loves these horses, but she knows she's not the boss.
Yeah. Yes,
sir. Here's the boss. He's the only male out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And this pretty Molly coming over here? Isn't she pretty?
I always wanted to buy a strawberry roan.
Oh, yeah.
But I never got one. I had chestnuts and bays and browns and blacks and white.
Yeah. I'd like to have one of them little Florida ponies. But I don't know where in the world you'd find one.
What do you mean, one of them little Indian ponies?
Call them Florida cracker ponies, don't you?
Yeah. Native, sort of native.
How big do they grow?
They're not big.
They don't have, they're not
really large. They wouldn't be as big as she is, I don't believe. But they are tough and smart.
We went over to the circus one time, and by gee, there's a little pony over there, and honest to God, he wasn't about that high. And, you know, you walk up and you go to put your hand on him, and he swings right around and kick at you, see? So this fellow's with me. He says, you come up one way and I'll come the other way. He said, one of us is going to get a hand on him. Say, that little cuss, he'd swing right around and kick at me, and he'd turn right around and kick at him quicker than you can snap your finger. God, he wasn't about that high. And the mother was just about that high.
Oh. I never saw
that. Boy, that little fellow, he was the quickest doggone thing that you ever see.
Like a puppy, like a dog.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you see, mister, you know,
about a ton.
Ooh.
And,
yeah.
You know, some of them was quite lively.
Yeah. I imagine.
And some of them, you know, you get some of them big horses, you know, and they're just like that. Just. And you get other ones that can really step off. Well.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
That's the end of Mr. Arthur Eastman's second visit, or second tape visit, his third visit, really. On Saturday, about noon, about 12:30, he left, on Saturday 24th of November, 1968. And this is up around 390, Channel 1 over, 390, Channel 1 over. And the end of Mr. Eastman's second taped visit, on Saturday morning, the 24th of November, 1968, Mr. Arthur Eastman's second tape visit, this is the end of it, on Saturday morning, 24th of November, 1968. Now, that was Saturday, and this is Sunday morning. This is Sunday morning. Faye went by to get talk to Howard Sims. This commode stopped up again, and I found out what happened over there. The reason Mr. Eastman quit working on the addition that Howard was putting to his house. This is just a reverse of the taunts, as I call them. They accept these challenges and they perform so well and make a good story of these things. And as Faye said last night, that was one of Papu's parts of his conversation. And Francis used to wonder if Papu ever did anything wrong. Now, Arthur's story is that Howard and his wife couldn't get together on this. And Sunday night, before he came up to go ahead with the work on Monday morning, Howard called him and said not to come back up there until he got some more money. And he also said that they got changed the plan and they didn't put up a 10-foot ceiling. They made it 8-foot. And then Mr. Eastman's idea, they followed that and he cut off the studding at the bottom and just lowered it. So there was a good bit of work went into it. And now part of this is on tape. Howard finished, I took it out, and he talked a little bit, but not near as much as he did when I rode over to his house with him to see his room and pick up some equipment he needed over here. Now, what he proposed to do was a 10-foot ceiling in front. He would just follow the old roof up to the comb of the house. And then he would just drop down and leave room for a skylight, well, a row of windows. And then the roof, when it went on back over the second room, would be low, just a very little pitch. Howard even talked about using it for a porch up there, a place to sit, take a sun bath. And then inside, he said Mr. Eastman had put up 14-16-inch joists. The studding was, and in the old house, it was 24-inch. That made, it said it looked like toothpicks. He had the joists up so fast, the studding. And then for the rafters in the room, the ceiling joist, Mr. Eastman had used 6-inch stuff, and Howard had thought he could get by with 2x4s. And double them Oh, yes. He was going to be a little artistic. He was going to double the two befores and put them about 4 feet apart. And then he could have had have an open ceiling up there. That's what he proposed to do. That looked like a den. And then the floor joists, Mr. Eastman got 8-inch lumber for that, and Howard thought 6-inch was enough. But the real trouble was with the roof. Howard, Mr. Eastman, he thought, couldn't get in his head what they wanted. Apparently, Grace didn't have it too clear either. And I don't know how clear how it is. Most of the figuring I see him do is with a nail on the sidewalk or in a... I'll just clear off a place in the dirt and mark it out. Now, when we start out, we're all three squatting out on the ground looking at the holes we've dug. And we found that this drain pipe from the house and from the septic tank are clogged. And Howard's talking about the old system.
Oh, that's the old system.
Oh, they claim 13 feet will sift through sand. It'll filter itself. And I can't believe it. The guy said if you put sand and rock and gravel on a 13-foot pipe, it'll clear itself. But
you don't too much care to drink the water, do you?
I don't care anything about doing drinking the water. These engineers will help. But anyway, that isn't what the state law says.
Yeah. Well, they don't always know.
No, I agree with you there. Might be better to put you in another tank over there. Right down over
there, yeah. It's sandy over here.
Yeah, but your wells are over here, partner.
Just take it away from the well.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
All the way away from the well.
Put you another tank. Yeah. I'm going to put you in a tank. I'm going to spring back down in that side of the yard. It's sandy over there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sandy over there.
You got
Well, it's sandy from here on. Now, out here, it's not clear.
Yeah, that's about the yard, front of the house out in the yard over there. But how I built mine was I dug in a big old wide bits like that, see? Off the end of my septic tank. And just stacked that pipe just like cordwood in there, about 25 feet of it. Makes a great big pit for it to drain into. See, it works better than this sand. It gets right around that joint and just finally just roots get in and just finally just clog it right up.
Yeah.
And I had better luck with mine fixing that way than I do putting in drains in.
Is that right?
You said you did yours a couple of years ago and had
I haven't been in trouble. I was having trouble for 6 months with it that way.
Yeah.
So just a drain field?
Instead of putting a drain field, I just dug me a great big hole out there and fill it up full of pipe.
Oh, shit.
I dug about 4 foot deep, but I think 50 or 100 feet pipe in it. You know, it's got cordwood in it. And I thought we put tin on both sides and cover it up.
Yeah.
You got plenty of tin.
Yeah.
How are you coming on those rooms down there, Mr. Sam?
Well, I guess we're getting all right. Try to get the roof on it today.
Faye, that was interesting over there, how it showed it to me. This man he got to work for, Mr. What's his name?
Eastman.
Eastman down at, you know Mr. Eastman. He put in those studs 14, 16 inches.
Oh.
And they didn't need a match for him. What I wanted to do was to put a high ceiling up on this side of the thing you see, and right up over that other roof, make that roof match up there to the center of it.
Yeah, sure.
And then come right straight down here with it and fill this in with windows. And leave this open up in here, see.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see.
And come on down here and have the
now,
roof.
Now, over there on the right, Faye, where you got that mark, that would be...
That's where the slant roof would go. 4 inches, all it was going to get it fall.
Not much fall, though.
Yeah.
See, make it flat. You can use
that's
it
over up. One room, you might say.
Yeah, over a room and a half.
Yeah,
And this would make a veranda, a little porch up there. You could put a banister around it.
Sure.
But he couldn't get that through his head that that's where it all had to be, was that high was up on that side, see, round to this point here.
Oh.
But he was making it high all the way around. Well, that wouldn't do me any good. I told him so.
Is he making 12-foot ceiling?
Mm-hmm.
Inside.
And I didn't want 12-foot ceiling. I want 8-foot ceiling. Well, that was his screwy idea. I don't know. I couldn't get it through their thick heads how I wanted it done. So that's how come I got the hip roof on him.
Who is happening?
Oh, I don't know. Some joke.
So now you got a hip roof.
Yeah, see, she bought a stairway out there. We're going to put up here and then put a right across and on the ceiling part of it. Run two boards out through there and make a nice little walk up in there.
Yeah.
And use the other old attic because it's all floored and all they had to do is insulate it and put some ceiling in it. I had a storage room up there for nothing else.
Yeah.
And put it from here right up there to it. See, well, you can't do it then. That baby's so confounded.
He had a pretty good plan on it, Fred.
Well, I'm sure you did. Goodness, you do enough building.
Well, that was great. Actually, it was her Grace's idea, but they couldn't get it through. If they hit it, the front was all it needed to be set, and down to the center was all it needed to be, those high ceilings. The rest of it could all been 8 foot deep. So I tried to tell them, and they couldn't get it through their head, so I quit.
Now you're going to have to do it yourself.
No, I'm going to leave it just like it is.
Till you get another head of steam.
I don't
blame. Build me another house out there, quick.
Yes, sir. Well, he got it up to where all you just put a roof on it and you...
Well, I got the roof. I mean, I've got it just about ready to be roofed. I'm going to knock all that tin. I was putting it up there just to keep the rain and ruin my subfloor.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to do something.
Warped up.
I ought to be over there helping you.
Yeah, this is what I felt.
Oh, well, that's not doing this. I need to come do something for you once in a while.
Well, we appreciate this. My goodness. It's sort of frustrating when your darn commode won't work.
That's right. But we'll take that trap out of there one day. This
now you want to dig it clear out to here, the drain field?
Well,
or?
If you wanted to put it in another septic tank and put it over there, we'd run it the other way out there, see? If you want to get away from this well and use this well. I don't know. But if you just want to leave it like this, well, let's dig it up from the part to the septic tank where I headed there back in both ways to the septic tank.
Both ways to the septic tank, clearing out to here?
Yeah. Clear up under the toilet up under there.
All right. I just lay it out just enough to get the pipe in.
Yeah, get it so we can get the pipe in and out. That's something.
You have to get under the house?
Yes, that's where your trap is, right up under the bottom of the toilet. That's where you don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see how it works as long as it has.
I really don't either. I see two traps on it. You don't need one on the line.
Them roots got it out.
So we started on my septic tank and ended on my septic tank, but in the middle, he had a good bit to say, and rather strong, stronger than I remembered, that he couldn't get it through their head, both their heads, what he wanted. And now it's not a matter of deciding who's right and who's wrong. It's just the reverse of that taunt where Mr. Eastman would say, you know, that he did this in record time, and the fellow came over to get him to do his. And now, you see, here's one that he won't tell about. Like Cecil Pardee said to me one time, I run myself down. And he said, well, you don't think very well of yourself, do you? So somewhere along the line, there is that distinction. The people who taunt have those taunts who speak well of themselves and those who sort of run themselves down. And this is the end of that little short session with Howard Sims. My longer comments on it. This is Channel 1 over. 565 or 70, and Sunday, the 24th of November 1968, Sunday, the 24th of November 1968, and this is Channel 1 over, around 365 or 70. This is Mr. Eastman's visit on Monday, the 16th, December 1968. Mr. Eastman's visit on Monday, the 16th of December 1968. That was that cold weekend. 24, two nights in a row. And Faye had her flu or bronchial trouble, and she wouldn't sleep with me. She slept in there, in the her parlor, in her room. And it was always just cool in there, and the little stove didn't heat. And after the cold was over, on Monday, it occurred to me that it just wasn't getting oil. Now, I'm no good at fixing these things, so she got Mr. Eastman on the phone, and he came right on up here, right after dinner.
And he did.
I couldn't wait for him to finish to go in there and start taping. He just started, and he's working on the thing and talking too. There wasn't really much to do. They had that little line that he stuck up the kerosene pipe or line, and that was really, I think, what helped it. The strainer he took out, and it was practically clean. And the first thing you know, it was just burning and warming us up. And then
open that up, and the fire on the inside, it might follow right along back out.
Oh, that's right.
Oh,
you
see what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, can't have a fire these days.
Guess I don't know how much insurance you got.
Well, not that much, I think. We'd have to come down and live with you.
Insurance don't help much in cold weather, does it?
You know how that you'll hear them tell. Such a building started, defective wiring. You know, I've got to see one start before I believe it.
Really?
I have seen too many dead shorts and too much of that stuff there that I've got to see it start.
Oh, really?
Because there's too much hot insurance.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. An old Jew told me one time, I used to take care of a big Jew camp. They kept anywhere from 125 to 175 kids there all summer. And then they'd take anywhere from 50 to 100 to take care of them.
Oh.
And I done all the maintenance work and done all their building and took care of the stuff there like that, see? Now, every spring, I'd have to go over there and open up camp, you know, and turn the water on and put all the pipes together and the tanks and one thing and another and get the water turned on. And then in the fall, you'd have to go over and drain everything. Jesus, they had 26 flush toilets there to drain. And all their hot water heaters and hot water tanks and one thing and another. I rebuilt that kitchen 4 times. And
this
old Jew says, build him a new house. Keep him 10 years, he says, and sell him, he says. It costs too much for upkeep after 10 years. He says, if you can't sell him, he says, have a defective wire and go poof.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, yeah. That's the way they do, you know.
Yeah.
You don't fool them old Jews very much.
They can always see the money side of it.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes, sir. You know, when they're young, going to college, they figure they've got to get just a little bit better education than somebody else just so that they can cheat him out of a nickel or two.
Mm-hmm. Just think a little faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was over there one day. They had the biggest doggone fireplace over there in the main hall that I ever saw in my life. That thing there had a 12-foot opening in it.
Oh.
Good Lord.
Yeah, the biggest thing I ever saw. And geez, you know, they used to buy wood by the from the sawmill, see, slab wood, you know, take in there. And you know, them kids would be too doggone lazy to cut up any of it. They'd rather take chairs. They'd take good chairs, just like that, you know, take them right up and smash them and throw them right into the fire.
Why, Miss Eaton?
Yeah, and I was there one day, and this one great big kid, and God, he was bigger than I was, he smashed right up to him, threw him in the fire, and I said, now, wait a minute, don't let me see you do that again. Well, he said, you ain't telling me what to do. I said, well, dear, I am. Now, I said, just about that time, the head guy, I see him go in the kitchen, and I went right out, and I nailed him. Well, he said, you can't say nothing to him like that. Because he says his father, he says, is one of the head owners of WFBL. That's a big radio and television station. And he said, hey, they give us a lot of money here every year. I said, I can't help it, but Jesus, I don't want to see him smash up any more of that furniture. Now, I said, if he smashes up any more of it, I'm going right over your head. Now, I said, you've got to say the damn camp, but I said, I know the camp directors, because they're the ones that hire me.
Yeah.
And I said, and I don't want to see any more of it smashed up. And I went right out, and it made me mad, you know. And I went right out to the boy again out there, and I said, I'm just telling you the second time.
Mm-hmm.
You want some wood now, there's a lot of it right outdoor, right out there. All you've got to do is right out there and take an axe and split it up a little bit and bring it in here. So then he went telling some of the other kids to bring the wood in. He just wouldn't do it, you know. All of them, some of them fellows are laziest bastards that you ever seen.
Yeah, they're smart.
I brought up Mr. Walter Nickel. I couldn't remember his name. Mr. Eastman knew who I was talking about. He remembered him. How sick he was when he sold that beautiful place of his, you know. And the man who bought it just let his fine equipment stay out and rust and just gave it away. And now that hurt him. Now Mr. Nichols was well-to-do, and the boy paid him a big price for the place.
Sold all the cattle over there for little nothing, you know, and that hurt him too.
Yeah.
Nichols. Walter Nichols.
Yeah. He's a nice fella.
Yeah. He's a New York State fella. He come from up there just a little ways from where I did.
Oh, really? Well, it you could just see he more than he could stomach, you know.
He had a big farm up there, right, just outside of Binghamton.
Yeah.
He sold it all out there for subdivisions, you know. Boy, he really went to town on it, see. He got a heck of a lot of money out of it, so then he come down here.
Yeah. Well, he still loves to make money after he got on here. I remember I talked to him one time.
An old fella. Well, he was from New York State somewhere, but he was down here and his wife died, and he got lonesome to go back up there. And he bought a little place over at Anthony. You know where Anthony is? And, Walter got a hold of it somewhere that he wanted to sell it and go back up to New York. So Walter went over and he paid him about half what it was worth and took the place. I went over there and done a little fixing on it. They built a front porch on it there. Probably cost him maybe $500 because it wasn't too hard an outfit. He turned around and sold out for $2,000 more than what he gave for it and got his money.
Yeah.
So he made about $1,500 right off quick on that deal there, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way he always was, right straight along. It seemed just so that everything was falling right in his hands.
Yeah.
And after he sold the farm there, he bought that place there. That's his third place above me. And he turned around, I don't know, he made $3,000-$4,000 on that place.
Oh, yeah.
Then he moved down to St. Petersburg so that he could be right near a emphysema specialist.
Oh.
And I haven't heard from him. I've tried to find out. And I haven't heard from him in about a year. And the last that I heard, geez, he was in an oxygen tent so many hours a day trying to keep him alive in that emphysema.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they'll keep right on puffing them cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the more that they tell them to leave them alone, the more they smoke them.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to take care of them.
Yeah. The more they tell them to leave them alone, then gee, the more they smoke them. Oh, Doc Spring's office. And the telephone rung. Doc answered the telephone. Fella on the other end there and been checking Doc's orange grove up there for irrigation system. Well, he told Doc it cost him $7,500 for irrigation system up there. Doc hollered, $7,500, he said. $7,500 for just a little aluminum pipe, he says. And they talked a few minutes there, and Doc says, bring it up and put it in. That tickled Miller, he says, $7,500. And he kept repeating it, you know. Finally, he said, bring it up and put it in.
Who told that story, Mr. Miller?
Miller?
Mr.
You know him?
Yes.
Clara Miller. Why, heck yes, he was here with me.
Yeah.
Clara Miller.
Yeah.
Having that heart attack. That's the best story.
Well, that's so. Back in 1947, well, I had a $40,000 contract to remodel a grade school. Seeing I had to build a fire escape on it, an enclosed fire escape and one thing and another. And in order to hold their public money, I had to run two shifts of men. See, to get it done, we had just a certain time that we had to have that done. And we had to tear out all of the bathrooms. And there was the 2, 4, 6, 8. There were 9 bathrooms in there that we had to tear out and put all new tile floor and tile up 4 feet all the way around and then put the keen cement from there on up, you know, to make it washable. And so I was working both shifts, working 16 hours a day. And well, I'd done that for about 3 months. Well, then I had this, I was down cellar, and I had to change the boiler. We had to raise the boiler up and put a coal stoker under it. And to do that, we had to put in a pump in there to catch the, it was a low pressure steam boiler, see, and they have so much water that comes back out of it. And they did have what they called a lung on it. But the lung, wouldn't work.
Here, you need them.
With the, yeah. And so, I had to put this condensation pump in down there, see? To pump the water back in. We had the water all run down into that condensation pump. Well, then you see, we had to raise it 18 inches to get it back into the boiler. So, I worked both shifts there. 16 hours a day I put in there. And my wife had asthma. And I'd hear the telephone ring, and instead of somebody answering, yeah, you could just hear a wheeze, you know. Well, I lived down the road, well, it was about a block and a half from the school. Well, I'd run down there, you know, and give her a shot of adrenaline and then go back to work. Because she'd ease up after she'd had a shot of it. And so I was working on that boiler. I turned that to... I had a length of 2.5-inch pipe that I had to turn it end for end in order to get it where I wanted it. Well, in order to turn it end for end, I had to stick it out the cellar window, see, and then come around the cellar and swing it around. So I had turned the pipe around, and the windows hooked up. They was on hinges, you know, and they hooked up. And I laid my pipe down, and I walked over there to unhook that window. It was in January, cold weather. Boy, gee, when I raised my hands up there to hit that, you know, I just went right in the heap, right on my head, right in the paint pails and tin cans and stuff all in the corner there. And, you know, I couldn't get up. Well, geez, I was there, and I just couldn't get up. No matter how I tried, I couldn't get up.
You knew it. You just couldn't make it.
So I rolled around there on the doggone floor, and I finally got rolled over to the cellar stairs. And I got up on my hands and knees, and Jesus, I crawled up the cellar stairs and got upstairs. And my brother was working for me, and I told him, I said, I'm going down to the doctor's office. I said, Jesus, something happened to me. I said, Jesus, I can't walk. I talked to him a minute, and I finally could get on my feet, and I got out to the truck, and I drove down to the doctor's office. And that was about 3 blocks from the right angles from where I live.
And you drove?
Down there. I drove down. I sat there in the waiting room. There was about a dozen of them in there. And, geez, I got coughing a little bit. Doc came out the door and he said, "Who's coughing out here?" I didn't say, "Now somebody said he is." Doc came over and he looked at me. He said, "Stick out your tongue." I stuck out my tongue and they all laughed, you know. He went back in the office there a minute. He got done with the patient that he had in there. He come out and he says, "You fellas, wait a minute." He says, "I want to see this fellow in there." He says, "He's had a heart attack." Jesus, I couldn't hardly get up out of the chair. he got me in the office there, you know. Well, no, he came back out and he had a couple of them nitroglycerine tablets. He stuck one under my tongue and he said, "When that's dissolved," he said, "you put this other one under there." And he turned around the rest of them. He said, "That fellow's had a heart attack." Well, he did, that scared the hell out of me, you know. So, he took me in the office there and he looked me over and gave me a shot in the arm. He said, "How'd you get down here?" I said, "I drove that truck down." He said, "How in the devil did you do that?" Well, I said, "I managed to get on my feet." And I said, "When I got on my feet, I got in that truck." Well, he said, "Your brother's over there to the school?" And I said, "Yep." So he called the school over there, got my brother on the telephone. And he says, "Your brother's over here in the office, says it's a heart attack." He says, "And you bring over two or three of your men," he says, "and get him home, get him to bed." So Jesus, they come over, you know, my God, they picked me up and carried me out and put me in the truck. And they got home and I lived up over the shop. I had a big building up there. Oh, it was 56 feet long and 28 feet wide. Seeing it all shop down underneath and I lived upstairs. Jesus, they carried me upstairs and put me to bed. Doc came down after he'd seen his patient there. Told him what to do there, you know. He told him, he said, "Don't let him out of bed."
This is the end of Channel 1 Over. This is the end of Channel 1 Over. And right in the middle of this fine story, that's what the best one of the afternoon, on Mr. Eastman's on Monday the 16th of December 1968, when Mr. Eastman came up to fix Faye's stove so it would burn fast enough to create a little heat. This is the end of Channel 1 Over, right in the middle of the best part of the talk, right in the middle and right in the middle of the whole visit. And this is the end of Channel 1 Over, the end of Channel 1 Over on the Monday the 16th of December 1968.
Down and he picked up his suitcase there and he said,